The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com.
I want a girl to best on around.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and if you're not, you ought to be shaking your hips. That's the name of the song. Now we're hearing by Slim Harpo, who died on this day in 1970, and some of us were lucky enough to see him play because we're old enough to have heard him play.
We're about to have a conversation about an issue that is very complex and very real that always flies under the radar screen for most, I think, in our city and in our communities everywhere, especially among people in leadership, because they don't think about it, which is the trauma that people go through in the poorest communities in our living area, poorest communities everywhere, the trauma people face every day and how they address those traumas. Questions from mentoring to therapy to putting our arms around issues that affect our students in our schools, affect people in their workplace, affect how families interact internally, affect entire communities. We are joined here right now by Natalie Mead, who's Director of Training and Partnership Support at Big Brothers Big Sisters, Leon Henry, who's Director of Outreach at Big Brothers Big Sisters, and Annette March Greer, who is President and Executive Director of Roberta's House. And good to have the three of you with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, I mean, this is something we were, before we went on the air, you know, and that we were saying that is a problem that is really is under the radar. People don't recognize it, don't understand the trauma of poverty, the trauma of what people live through in the poorest neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Our urban families are exposed to so much more loss and death than I would say our average families statewide or nationwide. And we have to take into consideration how that affects our children and families emotionally, spiritually, and physically, what they have to endure on a day-to-day basis. I mean, just from all of the traumatic deaths that we hear about on the news, there are at least 10 or more people being impacted by that tragic event. And how are we monitoring, or how are we seeing this play out in our communities? And we're not measuring that. We're not looking at that more closely.
I mean, yeah, because everything from violence that's in the streets every day that terrifies people going to and from work and school, to the violence inside homes, to just the violence of being evicted from your home, to worrying about what happens to young people, the things that people experience that we just don't see as trauma.
We're not looking at the emotional damage.
Right.
And we're not really looking at the post-traumatic stress.
That's the word, right, exactly.
Yes, and disorder that is a result of all of this. Much of what we see just with gang retaliation or even the repeat of violence in homes from domestic violence is part of that post-traumatic stress disorder that children are witnessing. Adults are witnessing, and they're reenacting and replaying out some of the same traumatic events that they've witnessed. And we've got to find a better way of addressing this firsthand.
Mm-hmm. And this is the kind of stuff that you all are doing at Big Brothers and Big Sisters, that you're, this has become like a something you've become acutely aware of in your work, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we see children through all walks of life coming to our door that are experiencing many different traumatic experiences within their life. In addition to the violence that we see, but there's also neglect. Mm-hmm. There is the sexual abuse, the child abuse, the bullying at school. I mean, can you imagine being a child who's afraid to go to school, which is supposed to be a safe haven? And so those experiences and that those children are, that is happening in their lives, we want to make sure that we're providing caring adults to help combat some of those issues that they're facing.
Another traumatizing event that happens to a lot of young people in Baltimore City, we have a lot of young people who come to us who have an incarcerated parent, which often means that they've lived through the police coming in at 4 o'clock in the morning, kicking the door in, handcuffing every adult male, tearing up the house, terrorizing folks. And we have a lot of, particularly boys, who have an incarcerated father, who come to us looking for mentors because of that experience. But what hasn't been talked about is having them deal with, not only is that a loss, and it's not quite death, but someone you love is out of your life, and maybe for all or most of your life. But just the trauma of having the police come into your home, guns drawn, the chaos, the screaming, all of that that goes place, and then you have to go to school the next day.
Right. Mm. Yeah, and I think in addition to that, too, with the mentoring children of incarcerated parents or loved ones, a lot of mentoring programs, actually just nationwide, for the past couple of years, we've been very intentional in working with youth who are involved with the juvenile justice system. And the funny thing is, or I guess the sad thing is when we look at these youth and the behaviors that they're exhibiting, a lot of them may be exhibiting those behaviors and their emotions as to why they've done X, Y, and Z because of the trauma, the abuse that they went through, or, you know, seeing mom or dad being incarcerated, parent, you know, the cops coming into the household. And so as we start working more closely with this with these youth, we want to make sure not only our staff are competent in working with the families and the volunteers, but we want to make sure that we are training our mentors and how to work effectively with these families.
Mm-hmm. You're about to say something?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You know, and that's very, very important that we provide that adult support system for these kids who have been through these horrific experiences in life. At the same time, we've also got to really go back to some of these fears and help children to do some stress reduction and in their lives, because they constantly relive these fears of having to re-experience these traumatic events. And that's what we do at Roberta's House. In addition to making referrals for some of these kids to get specialized care, their stories, sometimes their stories have to be told.
Right.
And they have to share these stories in order to process. Children experience trauma at various levels, at various ages, and it's all on their perception of how they view this horrific experience, whether it be an accident or a violent act or whether it be death. How they perceive the information and hold on to that information. Oftentimes, trauma is determined in a way that it actually gets stuck in our memory as an event that we had no control over. And sometimes it's having visions of that event over and over again, creating fears of that event. And then a child can either internalize it or externalize it. And externalizing is when it becomes a behavior that is acted out in some form where they're trying to control a situation that is out of control.
Right.
And or to get the attention to help get control of something that they can't control. So, you know, I guess what I'm saying is that we as adults first need to recognize that trauma has existed in these kids' lives. And we need to revisit these beliefs and ideas that they hold on to about this traumatic event. Are we talking about their experiences and uncovering some of their experiences and helping them to put these experiences in some perspective? And that's what's really missing in a lot of our programs, that we're not going back to the root of where this trauma has started or begun.
One of the things that someone I used in the program once who works with returning veterans, people who work with people who've been through combat and war, he said, I don't longer call it post-distress disorder. A post-traumatic stress disorder. I call it post-traumatic stress because it's not a disorder. because if you went through that, it is ordinary. This is what you have.
Right.
This is what happens to you guys. It was Woody Curry, that's who said that, who works at South Baltimore Station, who works with people who are recovering from war, and most of them are, who come there because they are addicted to alcohol or some other drug, and they come into his program for 18 months of living to get their lives back. But so he talks about his post-traumatic stress. It exists. That's what happens to us in situations. You'd be crazy otherwise if it didn't.
That's right. Right. It's your way of adapting.
Right.
Really, it's a norm for all of us humans to adapt to situations, whether it be a good situation, a healthy situation, or an unhealthy situation. We learn to adapt.
Yes.
And so post-traumatic stress is just a form of adapting. And it may not always be in our favor, but it is a form of adapting in order to survive.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Leon. You know, it's amazing that we sort of accept that as an adult. I mean, all of us have had stressful situations in our lives, or traumatic situations, and as adults, it's tough to deal with. But when you're 10, 11, 12, or 16, and no one is dealing with that, and we did a great training that Natalie led with the school police a couple of months ago. And one of the things we talked about is sometimes that kid who gives you the most trouble that day, the last thing he needs is to be thrown to the ground and handcuffed. Mm-hmm. Maybe, as I said, the night before, that his house got raided. Mm-hmm. Or maybe this is the anniversary of his brother's death. Mm-hmm. And we teach boys that you can't be a punk. You got to be strong. So we teach them not to we teach them not to express those behaviors, those emotions. Mm-hmm. We teach them to bottle up inside, it's going to explode. So you're right. As adults who work with children, we have to learn to recognize that sometimes it's not just the kid wanting to give you a hard time.
That's right.
There's things that are going on. You need to know how to talk to them, how to ask questions. And that's what we're doing with the school police, is getting them to a point where you're not just law enforcement, but you're actually a trusted friend, you're actually someone who can sit down with them and say, hey, this is not like you. What's going on?
Let me stop for just a moment, because I want to ask both of you, Roberta's House and the Big Brothers Big Sisters, to just take a moment here just to explain what you do, who you are. I mean, Roberta's House is something, is one of the, I think, one of the hidden jewels in our community. Hidden because it doesn't get the play it needs to get out in the world because of the work that you do with, you know, and one of the things that came to us, it came on, you were mentioned on our show a number of times over the last several months, because Tyrone West's family, Tyrone West being the young man who was died in police custody, and of course the police have been exonerated from that killing legally by the state's attorney, but this family came together and they stayed together to try to find justice for their loved one. But what they did as a family also was go to Roberta's House to deal with their trauma and loss.
Yes.
I mean, that's, people need to know about what happens at Roberta's House.
Thank you. Well, Roberta's House is a resource. It's a center. It's a grief family support center. And it provides grief education and support to individuals, children, and families who've experienced the death of someone close. And it is a preventative resource program in Baltimore. It's a free service. And there are various programs that take place there. We have Children and Families Night, which is on Tuesday nights, and we have a homicide survivors program. We also have an adult support program. We have also a partnership with the Department of Juvenile Services called Changing the Game for teens who've experienced not only a death of someone close, but all types of losses. And we're starting a prenatal infant loss program in February.
And so, and Big Brothers Big Sisters, I think that you know, it's more than just about getting an adult to be a friend or father or brother or big sister or big brother to someone who's lost a parent. Right? That's what we think it is.
Right. That's what we think it is. I mean, it truly is a youth development program. We are a mentoring program where we pair youth who are in need of additional support system with a trusted adult friend. In addition to that, we also provide training, technical assistance, and support to other mentoring programs throughout the state of Maryland, and providing training to their program coordinators and mentors. So, I mean, it's a number of different things that we offer through our program. But, yeah, it is more than just, you know, pairing two people and saying, go off and have fun. I mean, our goal is that, you know, lives are going to change. There's going to be some growth and development, not only within the child, but we also see mentors who are like, I learned so much just about myself being in this relationship.
You know, one of the things we talked about here so far this conversation was, I'm talking about this. You were talking about acting out and recycling the trauma, acting out. So, you know, when you were poor and when you're poor working class people living in communities that are forced to live in because the only place people can afford to live, acting out means something different than if you're acting out often in a wealthy suburb because you've gone through something as a child and I think that's really important because we look at young people and we think of young people as being, especially young black people and people of color as being violent and non-responsive and kind of all these very negative ways of looking at them. But their behavior mirrors behavior from wealthy areas that don't necessarily entail the same violence because they're not coming out of the same situations, the same neighborhoods, the same places. We don't get that, I think. But how does that affect how you approach it, how you approach your work, what you look at, what you do?
I think that it gives us a lot of room for being non-judgmental and trying not to be judgmental about the behavior of how we see children because of what they're more exposed to. It leaves more room for forgiveness. It should, at least, if we look at what a child's experience is. Although we have begun as a society to see acting out across all economic barriers and lines.
Right.
I mean, with the school shootings and some of the other horrific things that we've heard nationwide. We recognize that a child's development and how it grows up and its environment really plays a part on the person and the development of that human being. So as far as looking at our children who are living in poor communities and experiencing and being exposed to so much more loss, It sensitizes us. I think it does me. It sensitizes me to begin to look beyond, as you mentioned, their actions as a cry for help.
No, absolutely. That's something we – go ahead, Leon.
I was going to say, I think for many of our volunteers, our mentors, they become activists. Again, a fair number of our volunteers come from those affluent suburbs. And sometimes where our kids live is foreign. It's brand new to them. And so they may come in with some of those judgmental attitudes. And then they're with these kids and they see what they go through every single day. They see how they live. And if you care about someone and you see what they're going through, again, your whole idea of why they're acting this way changes. Mm-hmm. And then the next step is, well, what can I do? What needs to change? And so having mentors who can not only speak up for these children, but also, you know, we have some mentors that are pretty powerful, that are pretty well connected, to have them come out and say, this is wrong. I know it's wrong because I see this every single day. So don't call these kids bad kids or the troublemakers.
Right.
We as adults have failed them, and we've got to do something different.
Mm-hmm. So go ahead.
I also find that educating our young people that they are not bad individuals, that, you know, they have been through a horrific experience, a hard life, and helping them to understand that what they've been through has helped to create some of their behaviors. Mm-hmm. And it puts them back into control, that they don't necessarily have to submit to living these behaviors day in and day out, that it gives them a choice, that they can recognize those times when they are acting out or behaving negatively and step back for a moment and deep breathe and, you know, do some mindfulness for a moment and say, you know, I'm only responding this way because I'm feeling that sense of fear again and make a choice at that moment. This is how we can help our children and families if by educating them more about traumatic experiences and that it's not their fault that they're this way.
That's so critical, and it really is very critical. And I'm interested in, as you were saying that, Natalie, to describe what is it you're doing different at Big Brothers and Big Sisters than you did before in terms of preparing people to work with young people like this.
Well, you know, I think we are really being more intentional at providing more training to our mentors. I mean, we'll do ones on communication. And we may do some on, you know, how to be a good mentor. But we have to be more specific on those tips and tools. Or, you know, if we're talking about working with youth that are involved with juvenile justice, let's really sit down and talk about maybe why they're involved with this system. Really getting them to understand that they are partners with the parents and developing more of a relationship with those parents. And so this training is one of them where we're bringing up childhood trauma. We may skirt along it as we build the relationship, but now we're really going to have them sit down and talk about, you know, different traumatic experiences and what their role can be in being an advocate, as Leon mentioned, in the relationship with their mentee.
The other thing I would add is we're also looking at, as a staff, but we need to do more. You know, one of the unique things about our program is that we have case managers who supervise the match relationship. So when you have a mentor come and say, this happened, or he's acting out this way, or he told me that he saw this, how do I deal with that? So we need to be more intentional about our staff training and even who we hire, because there's a different level of experience that you need and sensitivity that you need to work with this population of kids. So we've had to do some things externally, but also internally. We have to look at who we are and what our mission really is.
Yeah, and I think we have to also get anyone that works within these children's lives, but because we're talking about our mentors, to really help them, help their mentees identify any strengths that they have. As you were talking a little bit more, Annette, of just identifying the fact that they're not to blame. Mm-hmm. You're acting this way because X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And I think once they, what I like to call their nurture of possibilities. And so as a nurturer of possibilities, you're helping them identify those strengths. You're helping them to identify what their passion is in life, helping them build that self-competence, that self-confidence, so they feel better about themselves. Even with everything that's happened in their life, there's still a future ahead of you. And as a mentor, I'm going to help you along this journey.
We'll come back to this another day, too, with all of you and others, because one of the things that one of my producers wrote an article actually about this, one of the things I read from his article in preparing for this conversation was that when you deal with things like post-traumatic stress and abuse, it can't always just be talk therapy. It has to be movement and art.
Yes.
Because
yes.
It brings out pieces that it will does. Not be brought out
yes,
otherwise, which is a very kind of critical point. Mm-hmm. That I was really taken back by the piece he wrote, Mark Henry, who works for us here at the show, and because he really kind of brought that out. I think that's an important piece of the whole kind of wrapping your hands around this process.
Yeah, and that's so key that you say that, because with the illuminations, it was artwork that was done by a victim of sexual abuse. And one thing, I know time is of essence, but one of the things that he wrote in his letter to God, he says, something seems to haunt me. It seems that I am constantly followed by certain numbness, which I cannot escape. I seem to have a cloud of uncertainty and mistrust around my mind. I wish I had answers to everything that has gone wrong in my life. And when I read that, I just thought about all of the things that our kids are going through and some of the deep down thoughts they have that we, even as professionals, although we try to help them, there's still some things that are going on. And all we can do is just continue to work with them. And so the one great thing with Illuminations is the question is, after you see all this beautiful artwork, is what are we going to do? And all the pieces of artwork, everyone's eyes are cast down so that you really can't look into their soul. But the last piece are two pictures, and the kids are looking directly at you like, now it's your turn. What are you going to do to help us live? You see our thoughts. You've read about us. Now it's up to you as adults, as professionals, to really take on the other kids that are doing or unfortunately experiencing some of these same issues.
This is National Mentoring Month, and we're coming to a close on, but this is a subject that we have to really wrestle with and address. You just heard Natalie Mead, who is Director of Training and Partnerships and Support for Big Brothers Big Sisters, Leon Henry, Director of Outreach for Big Brothers Big Sisters, and Annette March Greer, President and Executive Director of Roberta's House, one of our great hidden gems. It shouldn't be so hidden. It's not hidden from a lot of people, but it's hidden from sometimes the public eye through the press. And it's good to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
And let me just say, I also want to thank the March family, because you're a family that could manage their business and walk away and live in comfort. But what your family does, you and your brother and the rest, is you commit to the city, and it means a lot to a lot of us, the things that the March family does for this town.
Thank you.
Thank you. On our way out, here's Bessie Jones singing Sometimes, recorded by historian, scholar, and folk music collector Al Lomax, who was born on this day in 1915. He preserved some of the great music of the oldest blues and bluegrass artists in this country and gospel. Without his work, we'd have lost a whole history, a treasure trove of history of our music. So enjoy this. Al Lomax. Oh, not. He's not singing, but Bessie Jones is singing Sometimes. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. To hear this show again, podcast past shows, and find out information about our guests and the work they do, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And you can also listen to and download our podcast on iTunes. For Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.
Sometimes I tell my honey come back. Sometimes I want a rap back jack. Sometimes I get a hump in my back. Sometimes I'm going over here. Sometimes I'm going to get my pass.